This is an interview with Buford Broadbeck on December 8, 2009, and we're in his home at 500 Massachusetts in Kinsley, Kansas. Interviewers are Joan Weber and Rosetta Graff, Kinsley Library. Okay, what is your full name?
Buford Leland Broadbeck.
And where do you currently reside?
500 Massachusetts, Kinsley, Kansas.
And when and where were you born?
I was born in Kinsley, Kansas on May the 11th, 1925.
What were the names of your parents?
Ben and Ruth Broadbeck.
And your mother's maiden name?
Kearns.
And you know the names of your grandparents?
Yes, they were Ira and Ella.
Ira?
One of them was Ira and Ella, and then...
Broadbeck.
And, no, that was Kearns.
That was Kearns.
Yeah, and Charles and Ella Broadbeck.
Okay. How many people were in your family, or what, did you have brothers or sisters? Or
I have three brothers and one sister.
What's their names?
My sister was Bernice, my older brother's Melbourne, and the twins were Ernest and Ermel.
And you fit in where in there?
I was the youngest.
You were the baby. Do you know what brought your parents or grandparents or whatever to Kinsley? Why did they come to this area?
My grandparents, Broadbecks, were come from out around Illinois, decided to come out this area and went into farming. And then, of course, he eventually went into the carnival business. My grandparents, Kearns, he was working for the railroad, drilling wells along so every so often for to get water to the engines, and he had drilled one here and he just liked it and stayed here.
Oh, that's interesting. Did he ever tell you any stories about building the railroad and doing that?
He really never did build on it. He just drilled the wells. Mm-hmm.
So when he stopped, when he stayed here, did he keep drilling wells, and this was just his home?
No,
place?
He kind of went into, done some, he had he lived in the north end of town. He had some horses and cows and milked that and great big garden, and he rented these horses out, or himself and horses, to the city, and they had a grader to pull and grade the streets. That was his main occupation.
And it was just to say, he didn't have a livery stable or anything. It was
just his own stuff.
You remember anything about your childhood that?
Oh, yes.
Stands out?
Yeah, I sure do.
Well, tell us some stories.
Well, we always stayed with my grandparents. Kearns, when folks went out on the carnival, they'd go out early in the spring and stay out late, and we stayed with them. And of course, I remember having to help in the big garden he had. He had a great big patch of rhubarb we had to keep weeding and tend to that, and cleaning out the barn and helping milk cows. And main thing I hated worse than anything, we had an outside privy, and I didn't like that. But on the other side, I started out helping my mother and another lady run a cookhouse, which served meals and stuff, and hot dogs and hamburgers and stuff. My job was to carry the water in 2 gallon cans when I was a little to carry them to the cookhouse for water for there, and I finally got graduated out of that, and then I started helping my sister run the penny pitch, then I helped my brother run the bingo, and I finally got graduated to running a little car ride, and eventually got up to the big rides, all of them. I could run any of them.
Okay, the cookhouse was with the carnival?
Yeah. Yeah. They served regular meals every noon and evening, and there's lots of places we were at. There's a dog fire we set out in the fairgrounds, easier to eat there, and it was amazing. The food, I can always remember everybody, we'd go to towns and the people from town would come out there and eat what they eat because they liked the good food. 10 cents a hamburger and 25 cents a meal.
Okay, when did the carnival start then?
Oh, it was in the early, God dang, early 1900, about 1901 or something in there.
So your grandparents
started. My grandparent, my granddad Broadbeck, there was four or five of them in the family, my dad and uncle and a couple of uncles. And he'd taken them all to Hutchison for an outing at Cary Park there, and Cary Park was a merry-go-round set up. And Grandpa told me, he said, I looked at that and the people were paying a nickel a pop to ride that thing. And he said, that looked like it better than farming, so he sold some of his ground and traded for this merry-go-round, and then that's how it got started. They hauled it on team of horses and hauled around until they finally started doing it by rail a little bit, and then trucks.
How old was your dad when he made that decision?
Oh, golly.
Was he a boy still?
Yeah, well, he was a young man. He and my mother were married then, yeah.
So you, from the time you were born, the carnival was always...
Yeah, oh yeah. It was just like, when I was a kid, it was just like going to carnival every day. You know, I could ride all the rides when I wasn't working, and until I got old enough, then you went to work. You had to help learn and earn the eve.
Did you go out like in... starting in the spring or all summer, or how?
We'd normally start about the middle of April and stay till maybe the middle of October. There's always somebody having a little celebration or something.
And was it mainly in western Kansas? I know we were at the state fair, all over the state?
Mostly western Kansas and a few in Colorado and Oklahoma. Quite a few in Oklahoma and a few in Texas in the panhandle.
Are there any special memories of the carnival you'd like to get on the tape here?
There were so many I can't remember all of them.
I know John has recorded you, Fogger.
Yeah. One time I do remember we were playing Peabody, Kansas, and we were sitting in this park there, and next morning we got up, and there was about 3 foot of water on the carnival grounds, and it had a kind of a flash flood up there, and then when it went down, my dad and everybody went and bought a bunch of hay and strung it all over the grass straw all over the lot, so people tromped around in that darn stuff.
And that mud.
But... there were a lot of memories, a lot of good ones. I met a lot of people. We were treated real nice. I mean, carnivals, some of them had a bad reputation, but they always called us what we call a Sunday school carnival because we didn't have a bunch of gambling and girly shows and things like that. And people back then, that was one thing for entertainment, you know, and we'd play a place one year and they'd say, well, we leave now, you're coming back next year. Well, we'd have to promise them, and we did. We played a lot of places every year.
Were your workers mainly from Kinsley?
We had a few, yeah.
It was mainly family then.
Yeah, well, of course, with all the brothers, we had a pretty good, and then my one uncle went with us some too, and one of my aunts went along to sell tickets, but yeah, it was pretty well family.
And then in the wintertime, what did your family do?
Well, most time we spent all winter repairing and painting things again. Everything had to be repaired and painted before it went out. Took a lot of time.
What kind of rides rides or whatever you had, did you have?
Well, we had a merry-go-round, a Ferris wheel, a Tiller Whirl, and a Spitfire and the swings.
What's a Spitfire?
Well, it was a new ride that my brother and I, after we got out of service, we've been wanting to add another ride, and it was a plane ride. It went kind of, you don't see it around, but you could turn the wings on it, and it'd flip around and everything. We bought that, and then we had a couple little kiddie rides, car rides, things like that, and always had 10 or 15 concession, bingo and petty pitch and shooting gallery and things like that, ring toss.
I guess while we're on the carnival, this is sort of going ahead, but what happened to the carnival during the war years? Did you still go out? Did it change? What was the effect?
Yes, they went right on running. My dad died at an early age of 1945, and my mother and her two brothers took it out and kept it on there because it was good business. They made more dang money than war years because people wanted something to do, you know, relax. Everybody was working, making money, and
was there still enough family to run it, or did they have to find
some help? Well, they had to have some help.
You weren't there.
Yeah, they had to find some help, but that was one of the biggest problems. Of course, there were guys, you know, that were too old to go to service. I think they took them up, the draft took them to, what, 35, I think, or something. But it was tough sledding, and
did the rationing or anything affect?
Yeah, it did. Worst thing, even when I was, before I went into service, we had a lot of problems. You couldn't get tires. That was the worst thing. You had to go to the OPA board, and they give you a permit, and then if you could find somebody that sell a tire, you were all right, because they didn't have any tires to sell. And gas, you had coupons.
Did you get more gas because it was a business like the farmers did?
They did give us quite a bit of gas because we were entertaining the people to keep the morale up, mm-hmm. which I was surprised they did that to us, but they did.
Well, it was important. I
yeah.
Yeah. Any other way the war affected the carnival?
No, I don't believe so. It was hard sometimes to buy some paint and get something to repair with because everything was going to the military, but we managed.
And at that time, were you using the railroad or were you hauling?
No, we were just using trucks, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you think of anything else in that area?
The rationing of sugar.
Well, yeah, everybody did that. You just couldn't get any sugar.
Like your snow cones and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, they had to scrounge around and make something to make syrup for the snow cones and stuff. But I would say gas. And, well, I never did drink coffee, but everybody that drank coffee, it was hard to get a cup of coffee sometime. And the one I really remember most was that I never smoked cigarettes, but at one time Lucky Strike cigarettes had a green package, and all of a sudden they come out with white ones, and they said Lucky Strike's green's gone to war. Evidently something, the dye they were using was helped make ammunition, so they, and God, they sold more Lucky Strikes than you know what they ever do.
Well, that's interesting. That'd be fun to look up and see what the green was that they used. Okay, well, let's go back a little bit then. What do you remember about the Depression and the Dust Bowl? Now, the carnival was going out then. So
yeah, they did. And it was kind of tough, but I don't remember our family ever wanting for anything for want. We always had money. Dad had always could give us a dime every time we wanted to go to the movie, and we really weren't that bad. I think sometimes we were better off than a lot of them, but...
So during, I'm trying to think, the Depression, you had just been 10 or so, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people still patronized the country?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They found some pennies to go to
that? Oh, yeah. Well, of course, it didn't cost much to ride a ride, 10 cents, you know, or snow cone was a nickel, and popcorn was a dime, a nickel a bag, and, you know, it was... But I can remember the dust storms, though, worse than anything.
So tell us a little about those.
When they'd roll in, it'd just get dark. I mean, and I had a cousin that lived out in Manor, Kansas. She got dust pneumonia real bad. And my dad's mother went out and got her and brought her back here to live for a while. And I thought, holy tail, it's worse out there. It can't be worse than here. But you just... What you got here, just get in the house and try to keep from choking to death, and put sheets up on the windows to keep it out, wet them a little, and next day they'd just be black as you could see.
What, were you ever out with the carnival when there was a dust storm?
No, I don't remember any out there.
Well, that wouldn't have been good.
No, huh? The worst thing I remember on the carnival about one year... The grasshoppers, we were playing Guymon, Oklahoma. My dad, I wasn't very big, had me up on the platforms of the merry-go-round sweeping the dead grasshoppers off because you'd step on them and they'd be slick. So, but, no, it, I get to thinking about it one time even after I was in the cleaning shop after I first bought it. We had a dust storm come in here. I don't know whether you remember that. It must have been about 1950 or 51. No, you wouldn't.
I wasn't here. So.
You weren't here. I thought, holy Toledo. Is this going to start over again? But it didn't last long. Well, according to some of the stuff I remember reading now, the dust storms moved clear across, in, got to Washington, D.C., and that's when they started passing resolution to get these shelter belts in, change of farm and everything.
Yeah, it's amazing. I read, too, how they got up to Washington and New York City. Mm. You can't even believe they could get that far. So maybe with your other grandfather's garden and everything, didn't think there was any hardships for your family, particularly during the Depression?
No, I don't really remember.
We have found that Kinsley in general was sort of protected because of all the farming.
Well, yeah, had a little bit. I mean, they, you know, they could raise maybe a 15 bushel wheat and think that was pretty good sometime, but things didn't cost that much either.
Graduated from high school in what year?
43.
And I'm just trying to remember. I don't know what you said. So, how did you meet Vera?
She went to school in down south in a rural school until she was a freshman. She came up here and we kind of fell in love right quick, I guess. I don't know. We got married.
So you met her in high school?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when I went, we had your marriage as 42. Was your marriage?
Yeah, we got married before we got out of high school.
Oh,
yeah.
Did.
Well,
tell us about that.
Well, things were, you know, the war, Pearl Harbor was bombed and 41, and all of us guys knew we were going to go to service. Well, it was just guaranteed you went unless you had some deferment, and Bear and I decided we were just going to get married. I didn't know whether I'd come back or not, so we got married. Some of them said it had people in town say it'll never last. We lasted for 67 years now.
Why did you get married in Hayes?
That was kind of funny. My folks were up there at a celebration running the carnival, and they wanted us to come up there, and so Dad and Mom, we went to Justice of Peace and her folks, and that was the reason we did that.
Okay. So your parents could attend the wedding.
Yeah.
Married up there. And then, did you have honeymoon? Or?
Hell no. We spent our first night on the farm out at Vera's folks. And then we finally got us a nice little apartment in town. And all the kids after school would always have to come over and chat with us. So this was, oh, that's great. They're married. They're independent. But it was tough going there for a while.
Were you the only kids that did that?
Huh?
Were you the only ones?
Oh, no. There were quite a few different ones, yeah.
And then you graduated the next year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And turned 18, and so that's...
Yeah. I got my high school diploma, and the next day I got my draft notice. I was 1A then. And it didn't take long. It was August that I went in after.
But you enlisted, right?
No.
Because it was the Army Air Force. So
yeah, it was drafted. We had kids. In fact, I'll never forget. Yeah, I always thought of it yesterday. I had two good friends, and we were driving around that Sunday morning, and in his old Ford, probably I think a 38 Ford, I had the radio on. Of course, he interrupted and said Pearl Harbor had been born. I bombed. And boy, we got right quick. We were all going to, all three of us, going to go enlist while we weren't. We were still 15 or 16, and you had to have your parents' permission. Well, we all went home, and the next day we all said, we're going to have to stay in school. They wouldn't let us, but we had a few kids, and, of course, some of them turned 18 before they graduated, and some of them just quit and went on in. They maybe having trouble in school, you know. And there was a few of them went in when they were 16 that I know of, but it was kind of a funny deal. I went to Fort Leavenworth the first night there. They put me in charge of the group, went on the train, and had a couple of kids from Lewis. I'd never been out of the county. Can you imagine that? And they cried the whole night, the first night when I was in service. I said, I never didn't know what to do for them.
That was different from you, who'd been all over.
Well, yeah, you know, I'd kind of been traveled around and been on my own a lot. And
was the train crowded? Was it full of servicemen?
I can't remember.
Was there any kind of a send-off for you here?
No, it is. Maybe one of the draft board would stand out there and wave at you.
Did your parents do anything special when you left or before you left?
Well, yes. They said their farewell and all that stuff. But they
you
already
got on the train here.
Yeah. They already had three sons in there. Well, so it wasn't nothing new for them.
Well, tell us a little bit about your brothers and what, did they go in the Army or?
My older brother was in the Army. He was in the field artillery.
His name was?
Melbourne.
Oh.
And the twins, Ernest and Ermal, both were in the Navy, but they split them up. They wouldn't let them serve together.
And did they go in right after Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, most of them. We were all drafted then. Biggest share of everybody was drafted. You knew it was going to happen, but... But we were all gung-ho, you know. Get in there, we're going to kill all them goddamn Japs. It was a stunning to hear that on the radio, though. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was your basic or whatever?
That was induction. They just took you in there, and that's where they separated you, what part of the service you wanted to go into. If you wanted to go in the Army, you got a 14-day leave before they took you. Army give you 21 days, Marines 14, the Navy 7. For those of us, well, we want this time off, we're going to the Army, but a lot of them went, they didn't take it long, I guess.
And then why did you decide on the Army and the Air Force?
Well, I got chosen from it for my, I actually was going into cadet training to be a pilot. And I was taking my basic, and it was kind of one of them deals where we had board reviews every other day and trying to make you mad and get you. And it was real strict things, and one time I blew my top, and so I got washed out, and that's when I volunteered to go to armory school to be a gunner, and then didn't send me to that, and then for armor where say load the bombs and stuff, and didn't get that, and then they said you're going to be a mechanic, and so that's where I went to mechanic school. And we went to school a good 10 hours every day. They pushed us hard because they needed mechanics out in these fields and stuff.
Was that when you were in Shepherd's?
Yeah, no, that was when I was in Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
So
No.
Were you helping with the training?
Yeah, we were training crews, yeah. I went to the factory school up there, supposed to be be out in the field as a specialist on extra trouble or something on a P-39 fighter. Well, lo and behold, the Army does things that, well, I never touched a fighter after that. I went down to Tampa, and had B-17s and then B-29s. And I made crew chief when I was crewing them, and it was our responsibility to keep them going. They had training flights 24 hours a day down there. I volunteered to go overseas so many damn times I got sick of it, and I finally went to my CO and I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, have you got any brothers overseas?" And I said, "I got 3. He said, "That's why. They just wouldn't send them me."
Where were your brothers deployed?
My older brother was in Germany, and one of them, the twins, was in Alaska, and the other was in the Philippines.
They were spread out all over.
Yeah.
And what was Vera doing during this time?
Well, she was setting her up, helping her dad run the farm.
She stayed home. Did you ever go visit him?
Oh, yeah. We lived together for quite a while. Well, that's what really set the thing off. I flunked out of the pilot training was that they were interviewing me, and they said, "You're married, I see." And I had one child. They said, they said, "Where's she living?" I said, "With her parents." I said, "Right now she's visited me." And that major said, "You have to have your girl been only gone 2 or 3 months and you have to have her visit you?" And I finally said, "Man, is there any regulations against doing that?" He said, "No," but then I just decided to quit, and another major come out and tried to talk me into staying, but I said no. But anyway, we did live there. She come to visit me when I was at Lincoln. At Amarillo, never got to Niagara Falls, but after I was stationed in Tampa for a certain length of time, we were called permanent personnel, and we had a permanent pass. You go to town any time when you weren't on duty, and she wanted to come down and live with me, and we had base housing, but you had to wait for years. We waited and waited, and except looking for something for an apartment or something, I'd walk the streets because I didn't have a car, you know, walk the streets. And finally found this one apartment with another couple, and that was a disaster. She didn't stay very long. But anyway, what she kept telling her dad said, you ought to get down there with her. And she brought a load of wheat in during harvest, the last load, and her dad said, you take that money for that and go buy you a car and get your butt down there. So she did. But we ended up living with another couple later on, and they were nice people. They were from Michigan and had a boy the same age as ours, and he worked one shift. We had a lot of fun together, but we weathered two hurricanes down there when we were there.
So Vera and Leland drove to Florida from here?
With her dad, yeah.
With her dad. Wow, that was quite a trip.
Yeah, it was a trip.
That's a long way.
Yeah. Wow. She would tell you that, too. Well, one time her cousin, when you come down the first time, your dad and your cousin drove to New Orleans, wasn't it? And then your dad come on then. But, roads weren't that good.
What kind of a car did she buy?
She bought a 1940 Plymouth, four-door. Just couple years old.
Wow.
Bought it from Homer Ross here in the great city of Kinsley.
She had tires.
Tires were a problem sometimes. One time I was coming home on furlough, and I had one of my buddies lived in Missouri, and he got a furlough too, we decided we'd just drive straight through and I'd have more time at home. We left Tampa. We hadn't been an hour out and I blew a tire on a car. So we put the spare on and went on to Tallahassee, and I went to the OPA office and we'll give you a tire. We'll give you a tire if you can find one. Well, I had a certificate. Well, then they said there's a town up there by the name of Wainwright, Georgia. This guy told me, he said, he's always got tires. I don't know how they get them, but I think it was black market. But anyway, I said, well, we'll go that way. We got about halfway up there. Middle of the night, I blew another tire. So we slept in the car that night, and it was in the swampland. God. And next day, I took the tire and hitchhiked with this town. Greyhound bus picked me up and took me there, and the guy had a tire, and he brought me back and put it on for me, and then we headed back on to Kinsley. It was quite a...
Now, were you in service when Leland was born?
No, he was. No, I wasn't in. I was still with him. Yeah, we were.
But you were sort of lucky to be able to be around.
Yeah.
Both Vera,
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
During the big fire, when you made the fire, was his parents. Their parents, they called. Then he was home.
Mm-hmm.
You never did.
No, we were all right, Mom. She gets a little confused. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, one time down in Tampa, I got infantigo. You know what that is? It's drinking out of Lister bags or everybody, and put me in the hospital. And Vera was coming out to see me one day, and She had Leon in the back seat, and of course we didn't have car seats then, didn't even think of it. And he opened the door and fell out. Didn't hurt him bad, just skinned him up. But when they got out to the hospital, of course they checked him all over and everything, but always remember that. At one time, we had our squadron had a squadron party at a beach place some one night, and this good friend of mine, Joe, he decided to take Leland up on the front row. Well, they had a girly show, and Bear about had a fit up there. Well, he wasn't old enough to know what was going on. Yeah, we really did. They, once in a while, one of them would ship out, but they did alert us. We sat in the barracks for a week. The whole outfit was going to go to Tinian.
Where?
Tinian. Out over in the South Pacific. That's where the B-29 base was. And we sat around the barracks for about a week and a half doing nothing because we couldn't go off the base. You had to stay right there. Next thing we knew, the captain of our outfit come in and said, "You guys get back out on the line. Get them planes flying." Well, the reports going in, there was no flying time. Nobody was flying at our base to train those crews. The crews were sitting around. Didn't take them long. We decided that we were going to stay in Tampa, but it was frustrating. You know, you read the paper like in high school. Now, American history. We didn't study American history very much. We call it the current events. Every day we were supposed to bring a clipping about the war, and we discussed that and things that were going on that, which I felt was, although I was good in American history when we did have it, but it was really interesting, you know, to study that stuff. And you followed the paper real close. I did, anyway.
Did they have the newsreels at the theater, too?
Oh, yes. Paramount newsreel. Before every show come on, they'd show stuff like that. They never really told too much. My older brother was in quite a bit of action, but he wouldn't talk about it. The other two, one in Alaska, of course, they had a little fighting up there, but not much. Of course, he was in the Navy. He was a mechanic, also an airplane mechanic. And my older brother in the Philippines, he was a repairman for gyroscopes from the ships, and he was at a base there most of the time. That was after they took back the Philippines. The only thing one that got me was after the war was over, they took bulldozers and any of the equipment, mostly jeeps, and there was a cliff, and they just pushed them off into the ocean. Didn't want to bring them back. Yeah.
Did you have any other friends or anything in Kinsley that were affected by the war?
Well, I guess the record only shows we lost three kids. As the only three, which for as many went in.
You know about how many went in? No, we probably had that at the library.
Yeah.
But only three.
Yeah. And I've read, some places, they take a whole, sometimes these National Guard were all from one town, and they'd take them and keep them as a unit, and that's when they'd get a town that really get hit. We didn't have anything like National Guard or anything. They had ROTC in college. That was one thing we didn't have people around recruiting us to go to college. They did. If you did go, you got a deferment, and farmer kids got deferment, but a lot of those farm kids, they didn't like the idea of getting saying, people saying, well, you're being a draft dodger, and they'd end up joining the board. Was made up, I remember, Jerry Wilson was on the draft board. It was a Carlson, it wasn't Leonard, maybe it was his dad. I forget all of them, but anyway.
Was the draft, did people feel the draft board was pretty fair?
And oh, yeah, you mean if you had a legitimate excuse. I could have stayed out if I wanted to, because her dad wanted me to come out and help on the farm. I could be a farmer, but I didn't want to do that. Then there was people that physically couldn't go. My brother-in-law couldn't. He got turned down every time. He had stomach ulcers real bad, and he didn't go. But most of the time, you had to have a pretty bad ailment they'd take you.
And you came back in 1946.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just, I got discharged after it was over in both Europe and Japan.
And you were, let's see, you said you went to Amarillo for engine school.
Yeah, but it was.
And then you went back to McGill?
Yeah, I went back to McGill, and about then it was over. And you had to wait until the time of service, you had so many points, and when you had so many points, they discharged you. They started out, you know, the ones overseas had lower points, they could get out a lot quicker, and they never know, you know, they kept us, I don't think, I wasn't in there too long. I was surprised I got out as early as I did.
Was Vera with you when you got out?
Nope. Nope, she was home.
So did you drive home then, or?
No, took a train. Sat in the club car most of the way home. I think the funniest story, though, the day I was supposed to, there was another air base there in Tampa. Can't think of the name. That's where I had to go over and get my discharge. I put my uniform on and went over there and told us I'd have our uniforms on. And they looked at me, and I wasn't too proud of being a PFC because I was doing work that required more ranking than what I was doing, so I never put my PFC stripes on. They wouldn't give me a discharge until I come back to the other base and sewed them off. Oh, we had a lot of good time down in Tampa. Had the beaches down there, and we worked 6 days a week, had Sunday off, and we lived in a trailer park to start with. We had Vera come down and brought a trailer. That before we had the apartment, we lived in a little trailer house, and I had a couple next to us. He was 4F, and they had a boy the same age. Every Sunday, we'd go to the beach and play in the sand and get in the beach. It was kind of like a vacation. Actually, the air base looked like a resort center. The buildings were all permanent and palm trees all around. It was kind of a pretty camp.
And you worked, what, 10 hours a day, did you say?
Oh, when we was going to school. No, we worked three different shifts, 7 to 3, 3 to 11, 11 to 7. You alternated every 2 weeks. You took a different shift. That was a little hard to get used to, but
what did, Vera had a child to take care of.
Yeah.
And that probably kept her pretty busy.
That kept her busy, yes. She washed a lot of diapers on a board and bucket. I guess they did have wash machines when I was in that trailer park, didn't they? Yeah. Yeah. They had a big wash house and shower rooms. You wanted to go to the bathroom, to go to the most of the trailers didn't have bathrooms or anything. You had to go take your shower. And
this trailer was more like a camper.
Yeah, it was like a campground. It really was, yeah.
It doesn't sound like a bad place to spend the war.
Well, no, it was better than... I look back now and think, you silly son of a buckle. When you volunteer to be a gunner, you'd think, holy Toledo. we'd had guys that come back and finish their duty over in Germany and come back be training the gunners and stuff and get to visit with them and think, holy Toledo, I'm glad I wasn't up there them shooting at me.
Were your mechanical training that you got in the military, did that help when you were repairing the carnival?
Oh, yes, uh-huh. I could work on an engine, even car engine, basic same thing. I never did. I feel now I maybe should have, when I got out, I could have went and took some little more training in civilian work like that and had a pretty fair job and a retirement thing. But when I got back, it was like say my dad had died and mom was trying to run the carnival. I was the first one out, and so I said, no, I'm going to do that. I was offered a job as a rural post carrier, and that was one I really should have took, but I turned that down.
So for how many years did you do the carnival?
Well, I quit it and started in, I say, from my day of birth in 25, and I bought the cleaning shop in 49.
So in between 46 and 49, you worked at the carnival?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Did the carnival keep going after?
Yeah, it went for a few more years. Pretty soon all my brothers decided pasture looked greener someplace, traveling around.
I remember the carnival as the Broadback Schrader.
Yeah.
Carnival. So did they Schraders buy into?
It was originally when my granddad started, it was Broadback Amusement. And the brothers were there. And then when my dad and Uncle Fred Broadbeck that lived here in town decided to start their own, they called it Broadbeck Brothers. And then the demand, people were crying wanting the carnivals, so they decided to just split up. My dad bought out my uncles, and that's when they went back to Broadbeck Brothers, and he went to Broadbeck Schrader. Schrader was a son-in-law of
and you used to you were at the state fair sometimes
I never was involved in that Broadback and Schrader was he had it booked that the Colorado Fair he got to be a pretty good sized show. We stayed just a medium little nice show. I didn't want any more headaches at that.
So you bought, this is checking my memory, okay? You bought the city cleaners from Mansell Barnes?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, and he had the shop where Ron Engler has his...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought that in 49. I spent 55 years. I forget what that'd be, wouldn't it?
2004?
I think that's what it was, yeah.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I got involved in the fire department.
When did you start that?
Well, I went in on the Fire Department in 1951. At that time, my uncle was a fire chief, and when they alerted you, they blew the siren there by the fire hall while it was down the old city hall. And, of course, half the people in town come running to see what's going on. Well, I did that for a few times. My uncle said, "You got to show up and get on here," and so I got on. And 4 years later, I was chief for 50 years.
And that was, what was Mr. Kearns' name?
Harry.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, when you came back from the war, of course, you were coming back a few years later. Was there any, what, did your family have a celebration or anything in the town? Or?
No, you know, we weren't... there were so many of us went in, it wasn't really nothing to... we used to every, call it Armistice Day, usually had a bean feed and a football game and things like that, and maybe go out and tip a few beers and stuff, but in the bigger cities they had big parades and stuff for them, but I don't remember anything.
You joined the VFW or no?
No, I wasn't, yeah. I actually was, but wasn't. I took a, when the war was over in Europe, they got taking 6 B-29s to Cuba for R&R. And if your plane got chosen to go, you had to go along. But I did get outside, but I didn't claim that. But that was quite an experience to see the destitution down there. That was the poorest looking country. Either nothing good or real nice. It really was.
But the war hadn't done that.
No, no. They just, them people just lived like that.
So when the tourists came, where the tourists went, it was beautiful. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it made us grow up. It really did. And I don't know whether... I think military it would be good for a lot of kids. I've seen a lot of them go in and come back better kids. I really do.
Now, in your carnival, the people that you hired... was there discrimination? Did you hire anybody that was a good worker, or did you hire just whites, or did you hire Negroes, Hispanics, or just whoever was a good worker?
No, you just didn't tend with the colored people too well, no. We had people that went with us for years, maybe ride operators, of course, I went to high school with colored kids and had no trouble at all. Segregation just wasn't out here, but you got in the military, it was.
What was that like?
You just didn't see any. They weren't even at your base. The only one I ever remember when I was down in Shepherd Field, we had a base band that was all colored. And they could play music like you'd never heard before. And they'd parade up and down when they had parades every morning. And it just happened, my barracks was right next to the parade ground. And we had to get up at 5:30 or 6. But about 4 o'clock every morning, they'd be out there practicing. And all they played was the same song for 3 months, Maria Elena. I got to where I could...
That was your
revelation. I guess so.
So the Negroes had a separate base. They were not.
Oh yeah, they never didn't have any.
I guess I've never.
Yeah.
Well, the troops did get integrated sometime during World War II, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah, they started doing it, but I never was any base.
That was in a base.
Mm-mm. Yes, they
so,
did.
So
yeah,
was,
yeah, we did.
It was, I know, like the theater. They had to be in the balcony.
They had to sit in the balcony.
The carnival, they'd be on rides.
Yeah.
Just
we just didn't really have too many.
Mm-hmm.
We played Nicodemus
nearly
once a year.
Oh, what was that like?
Oh, that was something else.
Tell us about Nicodemus.
They kept after us for years to bring some rides in. That year we decided to take some in. And there was no electricity out. They had it out kind of with a grove of trees. They call a picnic area. They had a dance floor out there and in that grove. And so we agreed to take a couple of rides there. And all we had for lights was we'd run off the battery of a truck or something for the ticket taker, and the operator had one. But I'm telling you, those people, they had more dame for them than I ever seen in my life. You kept wondering whether how safe you were there, really, you know, with that many. But and then later on the years when we bought our own generating plant, we took the whole show in, and oh, they thought that was great, where we could really light the place up. I mean, that people come from all over the United States for that.
Was that on their, in August, on their Nicodemus Day?
Emancipation Day, yeah.
Uh-huh. So there'd be quite a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what years was that you were doing that?
That was after the war was over, probably 48 or 9 in there someplace, you know.
That's interesting. I might try to contact them, see if they have any pictures of when the carnival
mm-hmm.
was there.
Mm-hmm.
Might have some up there.
Okay, the carnival, we have a picture of the carnival getting ready to leave in front of Kern's Garage.
Yeah.
Now, where did you store the equipment in the wintertime?
That was a funny deal. We did any spare building we could rent, we rented, until finally my dad bought that building where Littrell had the storehouse back behind the extension office. There's a building back in the alley. We bought that, and that was our winter quarters. And my folks had a big garage up by the house. They stored some in there. But when we'd get in, we'd start unloading one ride at a time and paint it and repair it and then stack it in that building and everything. But then one time we had it there. Folks had the winter quarters in a big building in Greensboro. That was the only one they could find.
And then you built your house here.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of changed the complexion that more people started, that weren't poor trash or whatever you call it,
mm-hmm.
started moving over here. Why did you build here?
Well,
I mean, I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Well, my father-in-law, when he moved in from the farm, he bought this whole damn block.
Oh.
He was... decided he was going to do something for the town, build things for everybody. He built quite a few houses in town, moved a lot in, and when we got out of service, back behind this one house was a apartment with a garage below it. Well, he decided to remodel that for us, and next thing I knew, he kept saying, I'm going to build you a house on this lot. You keep it mowed. I'm not going to sell it. I'd be out here mowing with a little electric mower. But one time, he says, why don't you get somebody to draw up the plans? Well, at that time, Ray Gaskell was working at the lumber yard, and he was pretty handy about that kind of stuff. And we told him what he wanted, and he drew the plans up. And one morning, Vera come in, and I was still in bed, and she said, "Good God, they're over there digging something in this lot, digging the foundation." And I went over to her dad, and I said, "Ralph, I don't have the money to do this." "Well, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it." And that's how we got started. I helped him build a lot of it. He had one or two other guys. But when I'd get my work done in the cleaning shop, I'd come work here till dark. And I had a good friend that lived down here. He was a janitor at the Lincoln School, and he'd always go by, and Ralph would wave at him, "Hey, Keith, come on over. We need a little help." Well, he worked there, too. So
we,
Keith Lippold.
And what year was the house built?
1961, I think it was.
No.
Oh, that's right.
No.
Yeah, you guys graduated in 60.
Yeah, we graduated in 60. The house was here several years before.
55, I think.
Okay.
Yeah,
right, I'll
yeah. Yeah, I'll go with that. This was kind of the hangout for the kids.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I always remember the funny.
What was the attraction? Good food?
Had a rec room downstairs, a little rec room, and ice cream in the refrigerator.
So, Holly's Laundry was right
up there, yeah.
Was there a secondhand store next to?
Yeah, there was a secondhand store in there. Yeah, next to Vera's folks, yeah.
Okay. Vera's folks lived
in that green one on down
green.
There. Yeah. Two houses down.
Used to be a blacksmith shop.
Yeah.
Right down there. Was there any remains of that when you came back from the war?
Oh yeah, they were still operating.
Okay, that was
Bauer. Yeah.
Bauer, and he still had his blacksmith shop.
Yeah, that's that little building right by in between the restaurant and the big building down there, the Rick's.
Okay, that was where the
blacksmith shop was. Bacher.
Bacher
is the way they pronounce it.
I mispronounced it.
She always has to pick everybody's brains about the time.
Well, she's been picking my brain for the last 10 years.
I know.
I enjoy it. I mean, I'm glad I can remember some things.
That's good. So do you remember what was there before Holly's Laundry?
There was nothing. Vera's dad built that building, especially for the laundry. These people had come in here and wanted to start a laundry.
Well, he said he was going to build up, and he
did. Yeah, he did, yeah.
He did.
Well, he worked hard as a farmer, but he come down after he retired and worked harder. Didn't know when to stop.
So he built the laundry and the secondhand store. Was that part of that?
Yeah, all in one building.
Okay.
And then he built this house next to us, and I think three up on 3rd Street houses in there. He built where the Cedars used to be, and the furniture store, and there.
He built the Cedars?
He built that for, yeah. When I bought the cleaning shop for Mansell Barnes, he decided to go into furniture business, so Ralph built that, and they had a restaurant there on the side, and a truck stop there. Remember that?
Vaguely. I remember the Cedars, but I don't remember before.
Well, you were pretty young then. Oh yeah, he just couldn't keep things down. And he was active in the old Booster Club, but that was about the Chamber of Commerce. He was really gung-ho for the town. He helped build a sod house out at the museum. You know where Bethel Cemetery is? Right on the county line. The first house on the right-hand side there, where Ernie Davis lives.
The Crescent Community.
Crescent Community, yes. That's who she went. You went to Crescent Grade School, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We call the Y, just up, you know where that big tower is, right in that area there. I don't know, there may be 10 or 12, we called them shacks, because that's about all it was. Some of them had even dirt floor, no plumbing, and that's where they called them the section crews that worked on the railroad. They were all Hispanic, and I had quite a few in when I went to high, I'm in grade school with them in high school. Nice kids. Only thing they always made me mad when they didn't want you to know what was going on to speak Spanish. That always burnt me up, when I don't know why, and it still does.
Did you ever go visit them in their homes?
Oh yeah. I was good friends with a couple of them. We'd go feel sorry for them, sneak out some canned goods we had at our house and take them to them, because they didn't make much salary.
And they couldn't go swimming?
No. Mm-mm.
And your parents didn't mind you being friends or anything?
No. We were always called a North Side Bullies and the South Side Sissies. That's when we'd come down and play them in football and baseball and just beat the hell out of them in basketball. You remember that?
I do. I wasn't there very long, but I remember we always beat the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
You're a little tougher up here on this.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was the farm people. This was the farm people. Down, they were the city people.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do all
some of them thought they were high society.
I
had to go 1 year to the South Side when I was in the fourth grade, I guess it was. They didn't think they had something they didn't have fourth grade at Lincoln School. And I had to go, and I thought that was going to be the most miserable year I spent in life. I got to know all the kids, and we weren't that much, but when it came to sports, it was pretty competitive. We had one Mexican kid, Jesse Molina. He died not too long ago, lived up here. He was our pitcher, and we played hardball. The South Side played softball, and they wouldn't play us anymore because we beat them so bad, and we agreed to play them softball. Well, they didn't think Jesse could throw that ball hard, but he could throw it just as hard as softball, and we just skunked them every time we played them.
was grocery store, Natalie's? What was behind before this Assembly of God? What do you remember the building that was there?
Ooh.
I mean, I know what was there a long, long time ago. There was a hotel there.
Yeah.
But was there anything in your memory that was there?
It can't hit me. Yeah, there was a hotel, wasn't there? There.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, see, this was originally Main Street. Not sure you know that. There was a livery stable on this lot. Even when I was going to high school, it was still standing here.
You know who owned it?
Oh, God.
He's been asked
that. Oh, okay.
I've never come up with that name, and I have it on the tip of my tongue, but there was still a sign on the front end of it. As kids used to play in the thing and get inside, and then we'd walk the rails out in the back where the had the stock were, and we had rails on top of them where you could walk and check your cattle.
Was that always a park over there?
Ever since I remember.
A long, long time ago, it was a lumberyard. That's before, way before.
Oh, way before, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I played in, when I was a kid, that in the courthouse yard where we all played.
Okay. This is a highway question. In right here where the Highway 56 is, was that always just a street there? Was there always a street? Was there always just a street there, or was it always connected?
You know, that's one I can't. It seemed like that diagonal wasn't there, but it was put in. I remember when they put the diagonal in, but I don't remember how the highway went. I have asked different people about that, and nobody can come up with an answer on it. Because I remember mainly that where the easy stop is where the swimming pool was. But when they put it in, they had to cut about a third of the deep end. We thought it just ruined the swimming pool.
That's when they built the overpass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I just want to know what was here before, but nobody can remember.
Well, there were elevators over here, I know.
Yeah.
And coal sheds. And there used to be a...
Yes, it is pretty.
Very pretty.
I know I used to... As kids go to after school would go in the coal shed and have some cigarettes when we roll our own cigarettes and stuff. That's the only time when I did smoke was when I was in grade school, junior high.
Did you remember a road between, well, the depot road? It was on the north side of the track. Would that have been how people got to the elevator? I found reference when Bears bought their hatchery down there.
Yeah.
It was built on the depot road.
Hmm.
So people maybe connected it really close to the railroad tracks, do you think?
Hmm.
Didn't have this street here?
Well, don't hit
okay.
me.
We're getting way off.
Oh. She got picked my brain.
Okay, we'd like you to tell us a little bit about Ridge Peters.
Oh.
Like you told us in the library the other day, so we have a record of what you remember about Mr. Peters.
Well, he lived across the street with us in a stucco house by himself, and us kids always called him Uncle Ridge because we thought he was our uncle because he was real good to us. And found out he wasn't my uncle later on. But he had to give us some, this kid, some, he gave us a Civil War rifle and some naps, stuff he brought home from the Civil War. And he'd tell us a little. He was pretty young. He didn't get into too much of anything fighting, but he'd tell a few things, but no, I can't remember all what he said. But
he was a Union soldier.
Yeah. He was just kind of a fascinating man. He really was. Well, the economy was real good after the war. I mean, everybody had money. The ones that weren't working in the airplane factories were, everybody was making money, and times were just good. Not like it is now, but even with our economy supposed to be that bad, but I don't think it is here, but I don't know.
Most of the young men come back,
yeah,
and
stay for a while.
A while,
well,
then
yeah.
What happened?
Well, a lot of them drifted off to other towns and stuff. Some of them went back to school, went to college. I know a few of my classmates did. Oh.
Got to flip our tape over. I was thinking.
I was wondering when it was going to do.
It's 90 minutes.
Oh yeah, there was a few in my class. I'm trying to think, it wasn't a lot. Most of them, biggest share of them were farm kids. They just come back and went into farming.
I guess one thing we didn't ask you about was most people have told us about what Saturday night in Kinsley was like on Main Street and stuff.
Well, Saturday night in Kinsley was a big night. People would come down at daylight, park their car so they had a space to park on Main Street, and then come back later on and do their shopping and go to the theater. And the theater on Saturday night was always packed. When I was in the cleaning business, I stayed open until 9 o'clock to accommodate the people. And after 9 o'clock, we'd all go down to the old drugstore down where the pool hall is, and Joe and Ralph would mix up some limeade and have a little bourbon. The women would play bridge, and us men would play poker. That was a Saturday night deal.
So those Tina's was open 6 days a week. The Tina's was open 6 days a week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Late.
Yeah, till 9 o'clock, yeah.
The other night you closed it.
Well, I closed at 6. But then I got that down to 5. Like I say, lived here all my life. We've never ever thought about leaving. I tried my best to be a good citizen and help out in civic things, and I just still think it's a nice little town. It's a shame to see all the businesses close, and I understand we had two going to close again. But I just look back and think, God, every building in that town had a business in 1949, but it's just a sign of times. You go to any other little town, the same thing.
McKinsey was a good place to live.
Yeah, We had the railroad here, two highways. We had a couple of creameries and elevators, three banks, three lumber yards. 150 filling stations, I think.
Car dealers, too.
And a lot of churches, really. Now we have. Mm-hmm. And I always thought of good schools. I served on the school board for 4 or 5 years. I didn't think that. A lot of the people thought, what the hell they put him on the school board for? But we did have some good basketball and football teams when I got on there. I seen to that. We won a few games with them.
Maybe we should have you, when you first started with the fire department, what was your equipment like?
Ooh.
And how did you progress? Tell us a little bit about the fire department.
Oh, well, when I first got on, there was, everybody was real old on there. And they had rescinded the age limit because all those guys were in service and they didn't have anybody. Well, when all those guys got a service, we started putting us on there, and it made the old guys mad. They didn't want to quit. Finally, they had to fire them, but very little equipment. We had one, when I went on 49, we had one 54 pumper, and the other one was a 1931 pumper, two trucks. We did very little training. Had a lot of poker and games and drank a lot of beer and booze. And I could see right away this wasn't going to be what we needed. And I didn't want to push my uncle too much because he had a temper and I had a temper. And I started going to some of the schools they have around the state. And they had instructors come out to your department and spend a whole week with you, have some kind of instruction every night for a week. And I thought, now that's going to be great. So I scheduled one to come out, and he got mad at me. I said, we're going to do it anyway. But then we started, had a bunch of guys my age all in service to come out, and we started, I felt, building a decent fire department. And it took a while to get the equipment. I still go down to the station and just look at the stuff that we acquired since I was on there and still are doing it. And it makes me real proud. I think we've had a good department. We may still lost a few foundations, but it happened. And we had some tests uptown in business buildings. A couple, three were good, but just a good bunch of guys to work with. I had a lot of guys, different ones, that move in and move out and quit or something. But
this was all volunteer?
Yeah.
There was many pay at all.
Yeah, we got pay. You got $3 a run if you didn't hook onto the hydrant, and $5 if you hooked onto the hydrant. And then it got up to, I think I finally got them up to a straight $10 a run. Now I think they get about 15. They don't get much. The guys don't do it for salary. They just something to.
Did you ever have any injuries? Or?
I did. I broke my ankle once. Stepped on a, trying to jump a ditch, and stepped on a beer can and broke my ankle. But and I had one guy burnt pretty seriously. We had a rural fire that had barrels of oil that they tipped over and it flashed up and when he was in there. And one death, well, on the guy on the fire department.
Who was that?
Bud Drott. You remember Bud? You know Bud, didn't you? That was kind of a funny case. City never did require us to take a physical to get on. Most of us were in pretty good shape. But Bud had had a heart attack, and he recovered from it. And that time he was working in the bank, and things changed around, and he went to Kansas City to work in a examiner's office up there for a while, and then he moved back here, and he wasn't on the department, but he lived there right across from the library, the big old house there, and he wanted back on the fire department because he was my secretary, and he was a good secretary, and so I went to Snowblin, and I said, Reen, I'm having a time with him. He wants back on. He said, you just, well, let him go on. He goes a nervous fit every time that whistle goes off. Well, lo and behold, he put him back on. And we were at this fire, well, where the Cedars were then, at just that truck stop. Grill got on fire, and he got in there and just had a heart attack. It really wasn't related to firemen. But we've had, I don't know, 7 or 8 got killed in fire, people that were in the house. Oh. That was tough to do.
Right, and you went on fire calls more than Kinsley, out in the county.
We didn't at first. When I first got on, we were only had a contract with Kinsley Township. And it got to the point where we were spending all our time going out to other townships we didn't get one nickel out of. And I kept saying that didn't work when we needed more rural equipment. So I convinced the trustees of these townships to put a 1 mill levy on for us. And that 1 mill helped pay for our expenses and helped us buy all of our rural trucks. And it, of course, it's up now a little more, but we were able, you know, to get some pretty good fire protection. And now all of them are, all the department looking over there kind of work together all now. There for a while, they, our insurance on the guys, where we didn't, went to another township, they didn't have any insurance on it. That wasn't very good. And I remember the first business one when I was chief with that were right in there about where the Legion building that they got in there. That was a big old two-story building in there. It got on fire, a pool all down below, and Vera was standing on the porch here looking at me, watching, and there was a staircase that went up to the second floor in the back, and she said she could hear me yelling at the guys clear over there. She said, you don't yell at people like that. And I said, well, they can't hear you with them pumps running.
That's the Keener building.
Hmm?
That was a Keener building.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. George Goodwin had a pool hall in there, and it started from a nice container thing. Somebody, it just went right up through the roof, and I, after we got it out up there, the guys were up on the roof, and some of them downstairs decided to see how the beer was still cold, and we were drinking a little beer, and I got me a couple of cigars and had puffing on them, and guys up there wanted to know what we were drinking. Was a beer, for we found a bucket and got a rope and take it up there, and George come in, and he just, you guys are going to have to pay for that. And I said, well, George, you can't sell this stuff anymore now. All right, he kind of calmed down, but I always remember that. And that and the Chevrolet fire, that was a test. And
but you contained both of those. They didn't spread.
No, yeah, that's it. I mean, we were, you know, that and the Farlow one. There was three of them there that, well, and then that where the old extension office got on fire pretty bad there, too. We kept it contained. But,
Do you ever have any cases of arson?
Chevrolet garage was definitely arson. But they finally got them on a case out in Colorado. They went from here out there and finally set that on fire, but they got them. But
well, now, they weren't local people, they were just
No, they.
Buildings on fire?
No, they'd had the dealership there.
Oh.
They were looking for
insurance
money. And now, you know, they change the rules. Usually, you know, if you burnt your building down, you got to check in 2 or 3 days. But now the law is they can't, if arson is suspected, they don't have to pay until they're proved it wasn't. That kind of stopped a lot of that. Plus the fact, I think there's at least a $5,000 or $10,000 reward for any information that leads to arrest for arson. It's helped the arson cases.
Good for the safety of the fire.
Yeah. Oh, that Chevrolet garage. When they called that in, I thought, oh no! I looked out the window there and seen all that flame. I thought that is going to be something. And it was a mean one. We didn't have near we had good equipment, but not like we have now. Well, it didn't take me long to start getting some equipment. Had a guy come in, and we had this, he was in here, he was a salesman, he had this one pumper. He brought it in to let us look at, and he knew we were kind of interested. And I had some of the guys come down. We pumped it and looked at it. And I said, what are you going to ask for that? And he said, $7,500, which was a lot of money then. And I said, I don't know. I said, let me go. The commission was meeting that night and went in and had to visit with them. And they said, well, if you can chew him down a little, we'll authorize it. Cause we had no funds. We had to go get no fund warrants. I don't know if you know what them are. You borrow money from the state or something. Well, I went back and I told him, I said, I got to come down. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll just sell you that truck for $5,000. And we kept it.
That really came down.
Yeah. Well, it was what they call a demonstrator, and there wasn't nothing wrong with it. He just needed to move it. And I was sure lucky the last one. We got that $140,000 from the fire bill that was a lot of town's money for equipment and stuff.
Went up on what year? Did you? 2004.
Yeah.
From the fire department?
Yeah. At that time, we always had, when a guy was 55, he was supposed to retire, and the chief at 65. Well, when I was getting close to 65, I told the guys, I thought, I got another year or two. I said, I'm going to stay on. Well, bunch of them went to the commission meeting trying to get the ordinance changed. Well, I looked the ordinance up and didn't say that I had to retire at 65, and said the assistant chief did, but not the chief. So they talked me into staying, and I told them I'm going to stay till I put 50 years in. I mean, I was still in pretty good shape then, but I could see it needed some younger people in there. I didn't want to make some decision, somebody get hurt or something, but she was my little chief, weren't you? See, it was her job when we had, the only way to alert us was these fire phones, you know. You called in and the fire phones would ring, and when they blew the whistle, and she, after she got the whistle blew going and everything, she'd get on the other phone and start calling guys that maybe couldn't hear the siren and stuff. Well, no, I had 10 different places, three in businesses and seven in homes. And when the fire phone rang, it rang all of them. And then when there was a fire, we had a button right there. We could push, and then whoever done that is supposed to stay then you could call in, and you could, when you call in, you could get three calls at a time, and the person that took the call then told them where the fire was. And then after that, maybe you had to wait a little bit, and then three more could call in. But lots of times, that siren, you just couldn't hear it sometimes, whether the wind was one way or the other. But now they do it on pagers. It's a much better, faster. Yeah, you know, them young kids about drove me nuts. I used to could get to the fire before them, but them last few years, I couldn't.